Good afternoon and welcome into Woods and Water, South Carolina. As they say at the Department of Motor Vehicles where I had to go to get my real ID this week, it's a great day in South Carolina. You know, the weather forecasters, they were only partially wrong this time. We got rain for, what, 3 or 4 days and some showers. I mean, it's a summertime pattern now. Afternoon thunderstorms. But I think it's funny. Weather forecasters. I give them a hard time, but they're nice people. They do the best they can. But, you know, Mother Nature is just not something you can predict all the time. Going to jump right into it, get the calendar of events out of the way, because we got some great calls coming up. We're going to talk to Paul Geddes, who can take you out on the water in your boat and show you how to use your low-rent electronics to their fullest extent and not, like, turn it on and temperature and depth. There's more to it than that. But having said that, you know, even if you got the greatest electronics, you cannot make fish bite. And that's one of the biggest things when I talk to a lot of pros, they're like, you know, I've caught a lot of fish on my Garmin units or my low ranch units, but that never came into the boat. So you can waste a lot of time trying to catch fish that you can see, but they won't bite. Then we're going to talk to Jay Buffaloski, about alligators in South Carolina. Pretty interesting, thing. You know, we got not many people. Places in the United States have alligators. We're blessed to have a lot of them here in South Carolina. We have an alligator season hunting season. And if you want to hunt them, the application process is open now. It's online. It's a $10 fee to apply, and it's a preference point deal, a lottery draw. So, you know, it may take a few years, but it's a fun time. I did it once and might try to do it again. I don't know. Maybe not. But the calendar of events for this week brought to you by Visit Anderson Green Pond Landing Event Center. There's a fishing rodeo in Spartanburg at Chapman's Pond. That's 2753 Cannons Campground Road. There is no charge. Prizes for everyone. Free refreshments. Bring your own fishing gear and bait. It is sponsored by the Cannons Campground Rudder Tanning Club and the Spartanburg Chapter of the National Wild Turkey Federation. Ryan Groh over there in Spartanburg. Again, that's Saturday, May 26th, 9 to 11, ages 12 and under. Let's see. Free fishing days. Well, let's see. Memorial Day's Saturday. Yeah, Memorial Day's next Saturday. I think we're going to have May 28th is a Monday, and everybody's going to be off. It's a free fishing day here in South Carolina. You do not have to have a fishing license to go fishing. They do this every year. So all day from 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Monday, go fishing. Free fishing opportunities. And let me tell you what, South Carolina State Parks are a great place to start. They all have water for the most part, and they all have bank access for the most part. So a lot of them have fishing piers, and that's a good place for you to start. Cork, sinkers, some worms, crickets, and, you know, size doesn't matter. It's all about catching fish. And, in fact, I don't have it up here, but let's see if I can find it right quick. I'll tell you what, I'll find it, and after we're done, maybe the fourth segment, I'll tell you how many trout they stocked in South Carolina so you can go trout fishing Monday. But yes, free fishing day. Then there's a lot of archery camps bringing up all of a sudden. White Knoll Archery Camp, is having, Carolina Springs Middle School Gym in Platte Springs on Platte Springs Road in Lexington, South Carolina, June the 11th through the 14th. It's a 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. 4-day camp, you know, introduction to archery. There's another one out there that is in Horry County, St. James Middle School, the same time, June 11th to the 14th, and then they have another one June 18th to the 21st. You know, there's a cost to it, but it's introduction to archery, which is one of the very best ones. And I got an article here about some Manhattan Democrat assemblywoman who wants to outlaw the archery in school programs in New York because it contributes to the gun culture, whatever that is. You know, I've been to a lot of these things. I've yet to see any kids walking around with guns. DNR has their guns, not the kids, archery. So anyway, there's a few things for you to do. Try to get out and fish Monday. Great time. Back on the other side with Paul Geddes and Jay Buffaloski at the bottom of the hour. More Woods and Water, South Carolina. Hang on. welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. I had the opportunity, you know, I get to ride around and watch a lot of people fish. But about a month or so ago, we had a big, the BASS came to town, had the Eastern High School open on Lake Hartwell, and I wanted to get out on the water, so I don't have a bass boat of my own, so I have to lean on other people or ask other people. And anyway, I had the pleasure of spending a few hours out on Lake Hartwell with Paul Geddes from Greenwood, South Carolina, and just a really neat guy, and he's got a really neat little business. I think a lot of you fishermen, boaters will really need to think about taking him up on it because, you know, just like a laptop computer, it's a lot more powerful than what we ever get the use out of it, and that's your boat electronics too. So, Paul Geddes, welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Hey, bud, how are you?
I'm good. I wanted to say again, I had a great time with you the other Saturday. You know, I meet so many different people doing this job, and I just had a great time. I really appreciate you taking me out and running me around the lake.
Yes, sir. I enjoyed it too. It was a fun day for sure. We got to watch the kids pretty much catch some fish, lose some big fish, and learn a little bit of everything, and get to watch from. You know, I fish, the bigger tournaments.
Yeah.
It's sort of cool to sit back and watch the high schoolers go at it head-to-head all day.
And, man, what a beautiful sunrise. You remember that sunrise? It was absolutely gorgeous.
It was. That was probably one of the best ones we've seen in a while.
Yeah, it was great. Well, take just a minute. You're from Greenwood, South Carolina. Take just a minute. Tell us who you are, some of the tournaments you fish, and then we're going to get into what you do with the marine electronics.
All right. Sounds good. I'm actually from Due West, South Carolina.
Okay.
My home lake is Greenwood. Everybody knows me from pretty much fishing Lake Greenwood. My company name is Tactical Sonar.
Okay.
We basically do Lowrance training, installs, a little bit of everything, troubleshooting support.
Okay.
Just a little bit, anything to do with Lowrance, we handle it.
Gotcha.
I fish the FLW Coaster Series and the Bassmaster Open Series. I have for the last 4 or 5 years. And so we're pretty much traveling all over. We usually start in Florida every year and work our way up the East Coast.
Now, they changed the open setup a little bit this year, didn't they? They went to just two instead of three different areas. They just have two now?
Yeah, well, they actually have basically an Eastern and a Central, I think it is.
Okay.
And they went to, instead of three tournaments per region, they've actually went to four tournaments with only the two regions.
Right.
And then there's a championship.
Okay.
It seems to have worked out pretty good. I'm not fishing the Opens this year.
Okay.
I'm pretty much took a year off from the Opens and just doing the Coasters this year. Next year I'll probably be doing both again. Just trying to get everything, my business sort of took off, and I'm just trying to, don't have enough time to fish both series this year, so just trying to keep on the up and up and keep everything going.
I hear you. It's a busy world, isn't it?
It is. Not enough time in the day.
I hear you. Well, you got a really cool thing. While we're out there in the water, we started talking as guys do and all, and you got a really neat business, and it consists of taking people out on the water in their boats or your boats and teaching them how to use the electronics. I told you about let's talk about the laptop. You know, I turn it on, I use about three or four little things on it, and that's it. And I assume from talking to you that electronics are about the same. People turn them on, know how to do one or two things on them, and that's about it.
Yeah, you know what's crazy is, you know, I meet thousands of people, you know, per month, and you know what's crazy is I do a lot of shows at Cabela's and Bass Pros,
right,
and seminars and training and everything else, but I get a lot of questions, of the basic questions. You know, these guys will come in, and whether they're tournament fishermen or, whether they're everyday fishermen, they'll go in and spend $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 on a set of electronics, and then all they use it for is depth and water temperature. And which you can get with a $99, depth finder.
I was fixing to say, yeah.
So it baffles me a little bit, you know, why they want to go spend all this money, at the same time. I know everybody likes the latest and greatest toys just to say you got them. But in my line of work, in my line of fishing, I rely solely on my electronics to find fish, you know, to everything. I mean, I want to see everything on the bottom that is absolutely there. And that's where I excel, is using my electronics.
There have been some huge step forwards in electronics and some of those side scan, down scan. Tell us a little bit about those features.
Yep. So we basically at Lowrance have absolutely made leaps and bounds within the last 5 years. The technology has absolutely soared, and it's absolutely nuts. We have, you know, the sonar, which we've always had, but then also we've came along with the down imaging. Now we have side imaging, and now we actually have 3D imaging that you can actually stand behind the boat and give a 3D contour of the bottom of the lake.
Wow.
And all the ups and downs and humps, everything else. And then our latest addition, which has been a huge hit, works really great. It's called Fish Reveal. So what that does is it takes where the biggest problem that I run across when I'm teaching these classes is people can't identify fish within structure.
Okay.
Say if I run across a brush pile, you're like, what is that? That looks like a big blob on the sonar.
Okay.
Well, if you turn your down scan on, it actually shows you the limbs of the brush pile.
Okay.
And everything else. And then, so that technology has been there, but now with this latest upgrade at the end of March that just came out, now what's happening is Lowrance is taking that sonar echo, the arch,
okay,
which means an actual fish has actually swam through the beam of the sonar. And what they're doing is they've figured out the algorithm that they can actually lay it on to your down imaging screen. So instead of having a little white dot here or a white dot there, like in your down imaging screen, now you've got a colored arch just like you do in sonar.
Okay.
So now there's no question what is fish and what is not fish. So it's a highly detailed picture.
Yeah.
To the point where, I mean, I can pretty much tell you how many fish, what species of fish, just how they stack up, just because I do it every single day of my life.
Right.
And I see it, and I've dropped cameras down. And everything else. So it really, once you start to see a pattern of how these fish set up and how they look, it's real easy to identify the fish and watch how they're acting and how they're reacting to what you're doing. If you're drop shotting or if you're actually scanning, you know, if you're fishing suspended fish or whatever. The whole key to that is basically being able to identify what species of fish they are.
And that's just time on the water and knowing what you're looking at, right?
That's it. Time on the water and understanding, you know, if it's, you know, crappie, you know, they're going to stack up vertically.
Okay.
Largemouth bass, spotted bass, and smallmouth, they're going to stack up horizontally. So it's really a key whenever you run over a brush pile, whether you want to spend 30 minutes trying to catch a crappie on a 12-inch mag-2 worm or... you know, you want to throw a crappie jig and, you know, catch the crappie. You know, it's sort of just being smart with your electronics.
I gotcha. And that's where your on-the-water courses come in handy, is instructing these people, hey, here's the on-off button, but here's a whole lot more you can do. Here's what you're looking at and all that. And the on-the-water classes, you offer them all year long?
All year long. Basically, for me to set your boat up, if you've already got your electronics installed, to tweak them and make sure they're set up properly is $25.
Okay.
And then the on-the-water classes is $35 an hour, as long as you're within 40 miles of me.
Okay.
If I go to Lake Murray, which is an hour and a half from me, it's a $40 trip charge.
Okay.
Plus the hourly class charge. I also do installs. The basic installs start somewhere around $150.
Okay.
Can go up to somewhere in the $250 to $300 if it's a real elaborate, you know, adding a bunch of networking, electronic hubs and, you know, speakers and everything else. But these things have come so far. Whenever we have accidents out on the water,
yeah.
DNR, sheriff's office. I work closely with both organizations.
Okay.
Since I have most of pretty much everything that you can actually have on a boat at once, the latest and greatest, I run 3 carbon 16s, which is the largest, fastest units on the market today.
Okay.
And what that does is just broadens my aspect when I'm searching or looking, whether it's a car that's actually run off the road or if it's actually a drowned victim. And we've found multiple people, multiple cars that's been missing, boats. A lot of stuff is underneath that water you would never even realize unless you had the latest and greatest, you know, information.
Sure.
Now, with that being said, you don't have to have the latest and greatest, but they make economy units, you know, that'll run you $500 or $600 that'll do a lot of the same stuff, but at an economy price. So they're just essential for everything that I do, and that's what's crazy is, you know, I spend a lot of time on the water, and it's, you know, I found a vehicle 2 years ago. We were actually searching for another victim. I'm sure you've heard of the Mitchell Gibson case.
Yeah.
I was actually out there searching for him and the missing boat and everything, and me and DNR was on the boat, and I was standing right there at Beer Garden. And I dropped them off at the ramp and went out and scanned just right a couple hundred yards off the ramp. And I pretty much, before they left, they was going to back the trailer down in. And I told the guys, I said, jump back in the boat. I need to show you something.
Yeah.
So they jumped back in the boat and said, what is that? And I said, well, it's either a boat or a car. And I said, the way it's setting sort of looks a little bit like a car. And they said, well, go ahead and check it out and everything. So they had to go somewhere, so they left. And with these carbon units and the Gen 3 units, I have an underwater camera that hooks directly to the unit.
Okay.
I basically plugged it up, dropped the camera down, and I actually landed directly on the license plate.
Oh, wow.
My first drop. So they come back down, brought the diving team, everything else. Actually recovered an individual that had been missing for 16 years.
My goodness.
And it was after the pictures and the screenshots that I took and showed the sheriffs and DNR, now they're starting to, with the help of the Gibson family, they're actually starting to outfit all of their units with the units that's able to down scan, side scan, and everything else for all the search and recovery victims, which really makes a huge help. You know,
oh yeah,
in the whole situation, whenever someone goes down.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Wow, it's you know, you were talking about the $99 unit. That's what my buddy just put on his little John boat. So, you know, we turned it on and it had temperature and depth, and we were like, okay, we're good. Let's go.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's crazy. I talked to, you know, I helped probably 3/4 of the elite field and probably 90%. Of the FLW tour, set their units up, tweak them, support them while they're on the road. I'm buddies with majority of them, and always pretty much helping them get set up. And it's amazing that the little things and all the little features that most people don't realize that these things have that would just make your life so much easier if you just learn how to use them and, you know, sort of make it an everyday practice.
Yeah.
It's amazing pretty much what you can do with them.
I'm sure. Well, I appreciate you doing this for me today. How do people get a hold of you again? You got a website, telephone number. How do they get a hold of you if they want a day on the water with Paul Geddes?
Yep, it is. My website is tacticalsonar.com. There's an email on the website. It's paul@tacticalsonar.com.
All right.
The phone number's there on the website. Everything is there you need. All you need to do is pretty much call me, book me. However you like to do it. I also do, high school bass classes.
Okay.
For half days.
All right.
What that does is if there's a young angler that's looking to learn a new technique, they usually take the father and the son out, or mother and son, whichever it is. and teach them how to fish that technique.
Okay.
Using the electronics, and learning what to look for, you know, and that, those run anywhere from between $250 for a half day. But it's just basically what the angler is actually needing. If there's,
sure.
It's an angler improvement course.
Yeah, I mean, if you, like if somebody wants to learn how to drop shot, you're going to take them out there, show them what to look for as far as structure, where the fish
yep.
are, and then how to put that thing right in front of them.
Yep, and then learn how pretty much what happens on the graph whenever you're dropping down and you're seeing your bait and then you see your weight and you're seeing the streak coming up and you're seeing the streak going down after the bait. You know, it's just sort of teaching them, you know, how to use their electronics, what to look for structure-wise, whether they're going to be in the ditches, whether they're going to be, you know, in the deep, deep water, or basically just a all-around good thing. And it,
sure.
it don't have to be so much using your electronics. It's more of a technique. But
okay.
what I try to do is whenever I'm, you know, say if we want to go skip a wacky rig sinker around. You know, a lot of kids like fishing shaky head, stuff like that.
Right.
But they fish a wacky rig sinker, but they don't really fish it to its potential.
Gotcha.
So one of the things, you know, that I like to do is just sort of show the kids, you know, hey, if you do it this way and put it here, if you can put it where most people can't,
yeah.
you're going to get 100% more bite than
yep.
anybody else.
That's right.
So that's a big key to doing that. And having the right equipment and showing, you know, the biggest mistake I see with that type of stuff is just the equipment, not using the right line, not using the right setup. And it's just making difficult, you know, making it a little harder for them. And with me being able to make life easier in a half a day, it'll save them a ton of money later in life. And as they're getting in this high school, you know, as me and you both seen that day, it's a huge, huge ordeal now. And for the parents, if they can save money here and there, it's going to make up a huge difference.
That's exactly right. Well, I appreciate it, man.
So,
take good care of yourself. Hey, when you get ready to go to Greenwood, give me a call. I'd love to go hang out with you for a day.
Sounds good, buddy. I enjoyed it, man. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Paul. Talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.
We'll do it.
Walk on down a country road. La 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 la.
Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It's you know, there's been a couple of news stories lately about people seeing a lot of big alligators. In fact, I think there was a story out of Florida that a mom in a car hit an alligator, and actually she flipped her car and ran off the road. And you know, it's just, you don't think of alligators being a public nuisance on a highway, but they can be. So I figured, well, hey, it's alligators are in the news, and alligator season is here in South Carolina, so why not talk to somebody about alligators in South Carolina? So we got J-Ball Filoski. He is the Fur Bear and Alligator Program Coordinator for South Carolina Department of Natural Resources, and he joins me on Woods and Water. Jay, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. Take just a moment, if you will, and tell us who you are, how long you've been with DNR, and you got a bunch of credentials out here beside your name. I'll let you go into those.
I've been with Department of Natural Resources since 1999. I'm currently the Fur Bear and Alligator Program Coordinator. So I deal with all the fur bear species, you know, beavers, coyotes, and,
sure.
and whatnot, as well as kind of overseeing the alligator program in the state. We actually do have an alligator program supervisor that we hired on last year.
Okay.
to try to hopefully get a little bit more on the research aspect of. And he's stationed on the coast where you would think, you know, it would make a lot of sense to have an alligator person.
Sure. Yeah, we don't have alligators in Greenville, at least not in most rivers and streams and all.
Well, hopefully not.
Hopefully not. Every once in a while I hear stories coming out of Lake Wylie. Did they actually have an alligator? Was that somebody's pet that got loose up there?
Well, I think on occasion they you know, a lone wandering alligator will kind of find its way there. Kind
okay.
of the same with Greenwood. Sometimes we get them that, you know, just show up in places that you didn't traditionally expect them to be.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you mentioned fur bears and beavers. I was on an upstate lake here a week or so ago, and that had a creek coming under a bridge into the lake, and I looked on the other side of the bridge, and boy, those beavers are industrious little animals. He had, the dam was at least 3 feet high, maybe four, and he'd use the pillars of the bridge to help stabilize his dam.
And actually, you know, that can be kind of a big problem because you know, bridges are expensive.
Yes, they are.
And actually, in a lot of counties, the state DOT as well as the county has contracted with USDA Wildlife Services for the sole purpose of trying to make sure roads and bridges are not impacted by beaver. Because it, you know, not only does it take a lot of manpower to get over there and get heavy equipment, you know, moved in and cleared out, and of course they build it back in a couple of days,
That's
so
it.
You have to go back.
Yep.
But you know, as we saw lately with a lot of flooding, you know, some of those bridges, you know, they get washed out and they don't get rebuilt back until sometime later, and they're very expensive.
Yeah. Well, I immediately took a picture of it and texted it over to Pete Rogers, who is a USDA trapper, and said,
exactly.
"Hey, Pete, I know this is Spartanburg County, but you need to let somebody know about this one because this one's putting pressure on that bridge it's not supposed to have."
Exactly.
So. Well, and let me ask you this, Jay, just kind of off the cuff here. I got a beaver. I don't think it's living on the pond. I think it was just passing through, but he chewed every pine tree he could find. Left everything else alone. Why, is there any reason he'd be chewing a pine tree this time of the year?
Just to eat it, or either plans on going back and using that to either build or store for later.
Well, he had gone, there's probably 8 pine trees around the pond. He left all the sweet gums, oaks, willows, everything else alone. It just gnawed the pine trees.
Huh.
Maybe his teeth hurt. I don't know.
Yeah.
Alligators in South Carolina. You know, we do have an alligator season. I've had it for a while now. What's the history of alligators? Have they always been here?
As far as I know, they've always been here. you know, in the history of alligators, kind of mirrors that to all those in the southeast that, you know, they were kind of hunted to near extinction and was afforded endangered species status quite a bit ago, and in the 80s that was downgraded to threatened, and they still remained as a threatened species, but only now based on their similarity of appearance to other endangered crocodilians. You know, elsewhere, not only in the U.S., such as the American crocodile, but in other countries. And so that status still kind of keeps some controls over it as it relates to hides and the marketing of hides and selling of hides.
Okay.
Because once those enter international trade, you know, we kind of have to try to make sure that those are not, you know, somebody doesn't slip some kind of endangered crocodile hide in with them, so that's why we have these tagging requirements that kind of establishes illegal acquisition, which is the term that the Fish and Wildlife Services uses, and so that's why we tag them. We have a state tag, and then if you intend to sell the hide, we actually replace that tag with a CITES tag, which is retained, you know, as that hide kind of goes into the market.
Okay, all right. Do we have much of that trade coming from South Carolina? Do most people that take alligators use them for their own boots and belts and that sort of thing?
Well, we do have some that utilize them for their own, you know, whatever desires they want to do with it. We have a few that probably enter the hide market. However, I believe the hide market for wild skins is not great right now, so there's not a lot of movement of those, and I think farmed rays probably is still doing okay, and you know, the difference between the farm and the wild skins is, you know, alligators in the wild beat each other up,
sure.
And so they're kind of in rough shape compared to, you know, animals that are grown in conditions, a lot of times grown in the dark in a lot of cases, so their hides are really nice looking. They're kind of standard sizes, so
okay.
You know, these places that buy them, get, you know, they know what they're getting.
I got you. Where primarily, where do alligators appear in South Carolina?
They're almost, if you were to kind of draw a line starting with I-20 and just shoot straight up through Columbia all the way to North Carolina, you know, that's a decent rough general guideline.
Okay.
It's essentially the, you know, kind of below the fall, from the fall on down.
Okay.
Into the coastal plain. But that's not to say that you don't have animals that appear above that on occasion.
Okay, I got you. I got you. Any, as far as human interaction, I mean, you know, we all see the videos of the guy getting butted by the bison in Yellowstone or run by the elk and all that, because they don't have sense enough to, you know, that animal is wild. And with an alligator, I mean, they can bite you. And, you know, do we have many of those confrontations in South Carolina where people do get injured by alligators?
Oh, not very many. Certainly not like state like Florida has.
Okay.
You know, we do have some on occasion. We're aware of one fatality that happened, I believe, a couple of years ago, when an elderly woman kind of wandered out of a facility unknown to the people at the facility, the belief was she stumbled into the water.
Okay.
But we've had a few other attacks. You know, not really that many. That's not to say that, you know, there have not been a few bites that have gone unreported where people have attempted to catch or handle. It's kind of like snakes, you know.
Right.
A lot of times people that get bit are the ones that are messing with it.
Sure.
So we don't usually hear about those.
I got you. Any tips for if you're around alligators, say on vacation down along the coast and all, and you got one in a retention pond or you're in one of the state parks and you see alligators, what are some of the just common sense things to practice
around
alligators?
Well, common sense things, of course, the common sense thing would be to stay away from it. you know, just keep your distance. Hopefully, even if you approached it, if it's a normal acting alligator, generally they'll just slip right into the water. Obviously, you don't want to feed it. It's actually against state law to feed alligators or to harass them. And unfortunately, that does happen. And the biggest problem with people feeding alligators is then they kind of expect it. And so that's when they start approaching people, and things can get a little more dicey. But, you know, for the most part, if you leave them alone, you know, obviously you wouldn't want to go swimming in places where alligators occur, you know, especially after dark, you know, unless you're in some kind of designated swimming area, because that wouldn't make a lot of sense to be in there when alligators are typically actively hunting. Not only that, it's certainly harder to tell what you are in the water if you're splashing around. I mean,
true.
It just makes a food item.
Right. That's right. That's right. You know, we often talk about it, and you mentioned it here, you know, alligators hunted to almost extinction, federally protected. Now they've come back here in South Carolina. And a few years back, 8 or 9 years ago, we've had an alligator season here in South Carolina.
Well, we've had a public lands alligator season. There's been a private lands alligator season since the mid-90s, and that was mainly for people that had large blocks of property, you know, gave them a mechanism to attempt to manage their alligator numbers. But as far as what most people are familiar with is the public alligator hunting season, which started in 2008.
Okay.
And you know, that was one of those things that, you know, there was kind of growing momentum because Georgia had implemented a season a couple of years prior to that, and some legislation had been introduced to start it and kind of stalled. And then there was a gentleman that was attacked on Lake Moultrie and had his arm tore off.
Right.
And that kind of was to, as far as the legislature, when they came back in session, it was like, okay, well, let's get this going. And so, you know, he was attacked in 2007. Legislation had actually been introduced, but it kind of stalled.
Sure.
So we started the season in 2008, and it's been going ever since.
Are we getting smart alligators? I mean, they live a long time.
Yes. You know, obviously, there's still some big ones out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't grow to that size by being dumb.
Right.
You know, one good thing that we've seen from this public alligator season is that a lot of the problem alligators on public waters are gone.
Okay.
We noticed that pretty early on, you know, because the first year it was kind of easy for a lot of people.
Sure.
Because the alligators had been used to kind of hanging around boats, following boats.
Right.
And those got gone pretty quick. you know, after a couple of years, you know, some of the hunters were sort of complaining that it was, you know, they weren't as easy anymore.
Sure.
And that's the behavior we actually wanted, because
right.
that's more natural of what we'd expect, you know, because even when we do alligator surveys in the summer, you know, it's gotten a lot harder to get up close to them.
Yes.
We go riding near them, they're ducking under the water.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, from a human interaction standpoint, that's a good thing.
Yeah. That's a good thing. As far as alligator, you're in the alligator lottery process now.
Yes.
So if you're interested in going gator hunting, you can go online. There's a $10 charge for it. You got 4 units down along the coast. Do you have to have a guide to alligator hunting in South Carolina?
You do not have to have a guide. You can. We do have a few guides, and we have a variety of alligator vendors listed on our website, you know, from all the way from processors, you know, to taxidermists, as well as guides.
Yep.
So if you need, you know, obviously if you don't have the equipment, you don't have a boat, that's probably the way you need to go. You know, what we see in a lot of cases, you'll have a group of 3 or 4 people that will kind of apply together
right.
annually.
Okay.
And because this is a preference-based system, you know, it does take a little bit of time to actually get selected. And so you'll see groups of people who kind of spread their preference points out with the hopes of somebody in the group being selected every year. Because the way this is set up, it's sort of a party hunt. As long as there is a permitted person with an unused alligator tag, you know, anybody can go with them so long
right.
as they have a South Carolina hunting license.
Okay.
And so, you know, like I said, you get some of these revolving groups, so they've kind of spread things out, so hopefully they get to go every year.
I gotcha. Yeah, it took me 3 years to get my tag, and I got to go one evening. And I tell you, the thing that really, we went up the Ashley River out of Charleston mm-hmm. with a good friend of mine who's a fishing guide down in Charleston. And who had taken, he and his group the year before, a bunch of friends got together, and they, 13, 14, it was a big alligator. I don't know how big the thing, it was huge. But it was in like one of the first few years of the alligator season,
right.
the hunting seasons. But what really got me was when we got out on the water, and of course, here at night, which is, you know, I'm not normally a spooky kind of person, but the upper reaches of the Ashley River are kind of, you know, a lot of overhanging trees in some of those
right.
areas and all, and then you start hitting the spotlight and the eyes. An alligator's eyes at night will freak you out. No kidding. that orangey yellow glow to them and all. And you realize there are a lot of them out there.
Right.
And then it's just a matter of figuring out which one is which side that I didn't get one. We chased John said he's probably 11 to 12 footer. We chased him for about 3 hours. And,
right.
You know, he'd come up a little further away and we'd get up close to him and I just couldn't connect with him, but it was a really neat experience.
Sure.
Go ahead.
And you know, what we see is, you know, we have people typically from, you know, roughly 40 states apply.
Oh, wow.
And even a few every now and then from like the Virgin Islands or maybe Canada, you know, because it's a southeastern thing. If you want to hunt alligators, you got to come to the southeast.
That's right, you do.
And some states, if I'm not mistaken, maybe it's changed now. Some states used to not even allow non-residents, but
okay.
You know, we've always allowed it. And you know, for a variety of reasons, you know, sometimes people have connections to the state. Maybe they even grew up here and just happened to move away, or they have friends here, or somebody invites somebody to come. But we get applicants from all over.
Wow. Did not realize that.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's a place to, if you want to hunt alligators, there's only a handful of states you can go to.
That's it. Well, if people don't want to hunt alligators, they just want to go find a place along the coast and take some pictures, you know, just
sure.
watch them, because I enjoy doing that as much as I do picking up a gun or a rod or anything else, taking pictures. What time of the day, what time of the year, and where do you want to go to be able to see one?
Well, you know, it does vary. You know, we have some properties when it's open to the public, such as Donnelly down in Colleton County, Bear Island, if you have access to it, maybe even Santee Coastal Reserve. You know, it kind of depends. If it gets really hot, sometimes we'll spend a lot of time underwater, so
okay.
you may not see them as well. when it's cooler in the early spring, early fall, when things are starting to cool down, you know, they may spend some time on bank just sunning, trying to keep warm. So probably a good time to see it is when the temperatures are probably like they are now in the 80s or so,
okay.
You know, where it's not so hot that they want to stay, you know, because they got to regulate their body temperature.
Sure.
So not so hot that they spend a lot of time under the water, but maybe in the water and maybe sometimes early in the morning when it's a little bit cooler, they might get out on the bank to sun. But, you know, some of those properties, and there may be some state parks as well. Huntington Beach, I think, has some alligators at it. And, you know, you'll see a lot of people that are on the causeways of these places or, you know, places where you can walk along.
Okay.
Some of our management areas, you can see some. I know Donnelly's quite popular with a lot of people out by the lodge. You know, there's a lagoon there that, you know, tends to have a number of alligators in it.
Yeah, one of our trips every year, a good friend of mine, we go down to Bear Island after duck season and we snipe hunt. Once they start burning those duck, the fields down there, we'll get down there and snipe hunt. And then we'll just take off and hit one of the roads and just go walking. And, it's always amazing how many alligators you see. And they could be anywhere from 3 feet long to 8, 9, 10 feet long. And they're just, you know, just kind of hanging out and sunning. Like you said, those ones you see, you can get pretty close to them, but you better have a pretty good telephoto lens because you get too close and they're gone.
Yeah. And again, that's the behavior we want them to exhibit.
Gotcha. Well, Jay, I appreciate you taking time out of your day to be on Woods and Water, South Carolina, the information on alligators. And what's the website and all they can go to find out more information?
DNR.sc.gov. And alligator applications are going to be accepted until June 15th at 5 p.m.
There you go. Thanks, Jay. Have a good one, and I'll talk to you again.
All right. Take care.
Yes, sir. Man, how time flies. Welcome back to the last segment of Woods and Water, South Carolina. I did look it up for you. Weekly trout stocking report for South Carolina was 8,550 trout stocked into the north and middle Saluda. Saluda River, the Chaga, Brasstown Creek, the tailwaters of Lake Hartwell, which is an interesting fishery, the biggest Detoe in the South Saluda. So got a lot of fish out there for you to catch. They'll be there this week. They've been stocking them all spring. I'm sure coming up to free fishing days on the 28th, there'll be a bunch more out there for you to catch. And those are easy, and those are put and take. It's just, you know, a lot of them. Some of them are delayed harvest. You got to watch your regulations. But it's about catching, right? When you're taking kids, it's about catching. Size doesn't matter. So there's just a few places you can go and catch some trout if you want to catch trout. I got some updates on the winter impacts on spotted sea trout and shrimp. From the Department of Natural Resources, May the 11th, they had, we had over 150 reports of fish killed by low temperatures in January, in Charleston along the coast. Less than a week into the new year, 2018, you know, it was cold down there, half a foot of ice and snow. Biologists and anglers were watching with a lot of concern because of, you know, potential fish kill. Trout just don't seem to do well in cold water. So, you know, they had the plea that went out, hey, let's try catch and release on the spotted sea trout till we find out what condition they're in, rather than shutting down the season like North Carolina did. So here's what we have. Good on trout, bad on shrimp. They've gone out and done a lot of surveys over the last few months, and they found it's not as bad as we thought. First quarter numbers suggest we'll see slightly below average abundance of sea trout this year, putting the population in better position than after the winter die-off events of 2001 and 2010 and 2011. Numbers weren't the only thing to worry about, though, because they're worried about the bigger fish getting hit harder. These are the mature fish that contribute the most eggs to the annual crop of sea trout. and that wasn't borne out. We're still seeing a wide variety of spotted sea trout sizes, said Dr. Joey Ballinger, head of DNR Inshore Fisheries Section. His team has been seeing large sea trout in proportions similar to the 25-year average, allaying a lot of fears out there. Now, white shrimp, different story. They took a beating. They don't say it here in the story, but had a lot of die-off. So that's going to put it below average for the year. They're also going to open it later in the year. But there's two silver linings. First is shrimp are prolific spawners. A single female shrimp can produce millions of eggs in the spawning season, which means that it's too soon to write off the fall white shrimp harvest. The second bright spot is that brown shrimp, the species most commonly harvested during the summer months, were not likely impacted by the cold January. So, good and bad news and fair news. How's that? Like to see that, especially when you started seeing all those floating trout and all you were really starting to get worried about, you know, what's it going to be like this year. That proposed ban on archery in school programs introduced the bill to ban such programs in the state after it was revealed that the Parkland shooting suspect honed his shooting skills in a marksmanship program at the very school he's accused of killing 17 people. The marksmanship program was the junior ROTC program where they used air guns. Okay, it's nothing like archery, National Archery and School program. So, you know, there's 34,000 kids that participate in that program in New York, and this lady wants to ban it all because she thinks it contributes to the gun culture in the United States. Great news. Got to hand it to the upstate Hurricanes. 16th out of 237 teams at Nationals for the high school. Middle school, 102 out of 255 were headed to Worlds in a couple of weeks. Wow. Hope you enjoyed it. As always, make time to get out there. Take the back roads when you can. Don't forget the camera. Back next week with more Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Hit me from behind. Yes, I'm gone.